Good afternoon. My name is Rama Shastri. I'm a program manager in the Windows Application Compatibility team. Before I get started on our session today on developing and supporting apps for Windows as a service, a quick show of hands, how many of you are developers in the room? Okay, great. How many of you are IT pros who are looking for supporting apps? Okay, great. Okay, just want to get a quick idea of how to position the content. The idea for this session came out of our conversations with a lot of enterprises, where they came back and said, hey, we want to go move to Windows 10, but is the developer community ready to go support these apps on Windows 10? Okay. And then we've got kind of created this chicken and egg problem where the customers are saying, we'll wait till the apps are supported and are ready before we move to Windows 10. And we said, okay, as Microsoft, what can we do to move this along? And that's what we'll talk about today. This is not a session where it's going to be a one-sided session where I just give you a bunch of insights and you're going to walk out this door. How I wanted to position this is as a focus group, right? I think we've got a lot of ideas on how we think we can get your help to move on this journey for Windows as a service. And I think there's a bunch of recommendations we have. What we'd like to do is position those with you and get your feedback on, are we on the right path, or should we be making some adjustments that'll make your lives easier? Okay? All right. You guys have probably seen this slide. Already have Windows 10 running on 400 million machines, mostly consumer machines. But we also have 50 million machines actually running Windows 10 in the enterprise. These are commercial machines. Most of the large enterprises are piloting. I think you've seen numbers around 96% of the enterprise customers are actually piloting Windows 10. So far, the response has been very positive. But the statement that I wanted to point you out is at the bottom. Windows 10 is the most compatible Windows ever. Okay? And this statement comes out of our own experience with testing apps in-house at Microsoft. And what we do is basically take the most top-used apps and run it through our compat testing. And I'll cover some metrics out of what we do in Windows 10. And also, looking at telemetry information we collect from the larger ecosystem. How are the apps doing? How many of them are crashing on Windows 10? Is the usage robust that users are able to use it without necessarily the apps hanging or failing on them? So based on that, based on this data that we have from the last 2 years, we've come to the conclusion that Windows 10 is very highly compatible. And this is the same message we're getting back from enterprise customers as well. As they go on this pilot journey, they're putting Windows 10 on a bunch of machines. They're very surprised at how compatible most of their apps are. And some of that is also reflected by the partners. As we work with our software partners, hardware partners, the message around compatibility in general is resonating. A lot of our partners are also coming in and declaring support on Windows 10 very quickly. Usually we've seen patterns where it takes them anywhere from 6 months to 12 months after we put out a release to come in and declare support. In the case of Windows 10, our partners have been very quick about coming in and declaring support. But then we always get asked, okay, you want our apps to work for you, you want us to declare support, but what is Microsoft's skin in the game? What is the guarantee that you're giving that you're not going to break anything underneath, and I don't have to keep on reacting to stuff that you're going to end up breaking? Right? So I thought I'll talk a little bit about our internal process of how we keep apps running and making sure that the app ecosystem is healthy in general. If you look at compatibility in Windows, one of the key things is your Win32 apps and Win64 apps should just work. I think that there are a few exceptions where there will be breaking changes. And those situations are if you have kernel dependencies or you have a dependency on a filter driver or specialized apps, or the second scenario is you're doing something crazy like taking a version dependency, or you're using undocumented APIs. And I'll talk about some of these gotchas and best practices in later slides. If you're not doing any of those things, in general, everything should just work fine. If you were working on 7, 8, 8.1, your app should continue to work on 10. And that's what we see in most of the cases. We also have strong compatibility in the modern apps, drivers, and devices in general. And I'm not going to read through the bottom, but basically I'll highlight maybe the key points. When it comes to desktop apps, and these are your Win32 apps, what we've done is basically make sure that the Win32 API surface does not change much at all. Okay? We're super careful not to introduce breaking changes in the Win32 API surface. Okay? And that makes sure that, that reduces the chance of any breakages from happening, and the app ecosystem stays healthy. When it comes to websites, if you take IE11, right, if you had IE11 on Win7 or Win8, and you move to IE11 on Win10, virtually there should be no breakages when it comes to your web apps. Okay? So from that perspective, our web app ecosystem is pretty healthy when it comes to Windows 10. Okay? The Edge story, however, is very different, but then the Edge story pretty much is non-existent in an enterprise scenario. Very few of our enterprise customers are still piloting Edge and have not adopted Edge as the browser of choice. Okay. But from an IE11 perspective, the web app ecosystem is very healthy. I'll touch upon modern apps. Modern apps, obviously, it's a container-based stuff. Everything is Apex. So we keep it pretty stable. Okay. But then modern apps are not very prevalent in the enterprise anyway. So if you're an enterprise app developer, I don't think you're focusing your energies on modern apps anyway, right? Your focus is going to be on Win32 or web apps. But modern apps is certainly something to consider in the future as that technology matures. From an hardware perspective, we basically designed Windows 10 to ensure that Windows 10 would just work on even older hardware. As old as 6 or 7 years. So from that perspective, system requirements are pretty much identical to what we have in Windows 7. So what we find is when we do hardware device compat testing in our labs, we find that most of the older hardware just work fine. What we've seen is OEMs don't support older hardware because they are interested in actually lifecycle management of their hardware, and they will declare end of life on their hardware so that they can move their customer base towards newer and newer models and makes. But so the key takeaway is, if you look across the board, Win32, web apps, modern apps, hardware, across the board, there is a very high compatibility when it comes to Windows 10. So what do we do to make sure that we maintain compatibility? Obviously, moving to Windows as a service, we're putting out more and more releases more frequently. How do we ensure that we maintain the compatibility? So, I wanted to kind of start off with the feedback loop in the middle. Right? From a Windows development perspective, we ensure that the designs are robust enough that we don't end up making regressions or introducing unhealthy changes or breaking changes that can impact the ecosystem. The other one is around, I talked about API change control. On Win32, we're super careful not to change anything. If you find a bug, we'll probably go fix the bug by creating a new API and making sure the older API still behaves that way. We also have other compat mitigation tools that we use to go mitigate the older API. From your perspective as a developer, it's transparent to you. You will not have to go in and make any changes. We're starting to get big on flighting and feedback. What this means is we're constantly looking at telemetry signals coming from machines about apps, drivers, and then looking for hotspots where there are breakages. And primarily we do that based on, is usage going down or crashes going up? Is this specific to a make and model of a hardware? Is it specific to a region? We found issues where certain regions, apps would break in certain regions. So we are continuously tuned in to these signals, and that helps us identify these issues very early on, and we can react to it and potentially even prevent it from before it becomes a very broad problem. And then the last point is the ISV partnerships. We started this during the Win7 timeframe, but with Windows 10, it's become a very large portion of our development process. As we develop the OS, we're constantly working with our partners. They get early builds. They get support from us for investigations. We help them root cause issues and making sure that they are ready when we are ready to go release to the market. Let me touch upon the numbers on the side. From a compat team's perspective, we have a test organization, and we take like the top 3,000 apps, and we test them with every single release. So every 6 months or so that we're going to go release a build, we're testing 3,000 apps, and these are top apps used on, based on top downloaded apps, top used apps. So we get telemetry signals to go help us come up with this top 3,000 number. What we find is there's a 99% pass rate on most of these apps. The 1% stuff that usually breaks is high-risk app categories. And high-risk means you're an anti-malware app, or you're a disk encryption app, or a VPN app. And these are categories of apps which have kernel dependencies, they have filter drivers, so they have some sort of a dependency that'll cause them to break every time we touch the NTOS or Win32 kernel. But we have specialized partnerships with these partners to make sure that they know exactly what we're doing, and they are well informed to ensure that they can come in with mitigations and fixes by the time we put out our product. I'll jump back to the right. I talked about hardware testing. We do device compat testing. We take different makes and models of computers from top OEMs. We take peripherals, Bluetooth, USB. We put them to our device compat lab, make sure the drivers are working fine. Helps us surface driver issues. And these are what we'll put in blocks. And if you're familiar with shim databases that our team puts together, on the client machine, it'll block a driver from migrating from 7 to 10 if there is a driver issue. And the device compat testing that we do actually helps us discover those issues. We do about, on average, we reach out to about 600 partners every time through a release cycle. And these are the partners we want to make sure that we've either discovered an issue while we were testing it, or we're making a change and we know that it's going to impact apps that belong to these partners. So there's a little bit of reactive approach as well as there is a proactive approach. We're going to change this API, we're going to touch something, we'll do something, and it's going to break these people. Let's go reach out to them and make sure that they are aware of it. You're aware of the Windows Insiders program. The flighting that we do enables us to discover a lot of app compat issues early on. And we're able to catch these fast. We're able to react to them, remediate them, before we declare the current branch release. Hopefully all of these issues are fixed. And Insiders is a source of a lot of issues for us. The 99% on the left-hand side, we're looking at telemetry signals, as I mentioned. From what we can tell, looking at Windows 10 telemetry, 99% of the app ecosystem out there is very healthy. The type of indicators we look at is usage, crashes, hangs. So if you've got high usage, low crash and hang, we make certain inferences saying, okay, this app must be working well on Windows 10. The reason I say that is we've designed this program called Ready for Windows, and I'll talk about that in a couple of slides, that helps us kind of inform our partners saying, hey, here are some signals that we are drawing inferences from, but these signals are available to you as well, and you can draw these inferences. And then we have a feedback hub tool on Windows 10. Our users can give us feedback about apps or drivers that are broken, and we sift through these feedback. We process about 20,000 feedback that are specific to Compat with every release of Windows. So what does the WAS journey look like from an app developer perspective, especially when you are on Windows as a service? The first thing we want to do is make sure that you understand what Windows as a Service means and what Microsoft is planning to do with the Windows as a Service paradigm. And then you want to be able to reevaluate how you consider your app Compat and how you're going to incorporate Windows as a Service into your app development framework. And we have certain tools and documents and guidance available that can help you evaluate your Compat situation. The third step that we want you to do is join the Windows Insider Program. I think the Insider Program was initially targeted at consumers, but I think we're broadening that up to now enterprises as well as app developers. It's an easy way for you to get access to early builds, ensure that your apps are working fine, or if you've found an issue, either work with us to remediate the issue before we ship, or if it's an issue in the app itself, then you have time to go react to it. 4 and 5 are the new programs that we put in place. The Ready for Windows program is primarily targeted at IT pros, and the reason it is done that way is we want enterprises to feel confident about their apps that are deployed in their environment and how do they get data about how their apps are doing on Windows 10. So Ready for Windows actually is a public website where we put out information, telemetry information that we know about an app and its health on a public website where enterprise IT pros can come in and search for their apps. I'll talk about, as a developer, how can you leverage Ready for Windows to go highlight and showcase your app, and then how it is accessible to IT pros and how it benefits you. We also have a new logo program. If you were familiar, there was an older certification, Windows 7 certification program. The WAS logo program is actually replacing the Windows 7 certification program. And then lastly, there's always the aspect of UWP, and you should at least start thinking about it. I don't think it's urgent enough from an enterprise perspective, but it's something that with Centennial that we're driving, there's an app converter. You should try converting your app and see what kind of issues you find, because I think in the future, that's the direction that we're going to be pushing in. So let me step through each of these things. How many of you are familiar with Windows as a Service and understand what Windows as a Service means? Okay, that's usually what happens when I go talk about Windows as a Service, right? I don't think anybody understands Windows as a Service very well, right? And then if you don't understand it, then you have trouble on, okay, Microsoft's pushing Windows as a Service, but what do I do? What does that mean to me? So I wanted to cover the next 2 or 3 slides talking about Windows as a Service and what this means to you. I want to start off with why we went down this path. Why did we do Windows as a Service? As we looked across our user base, we primarily identified 3 main audiences. There were obviously the consumers, right? And they cared about new features, the bells and whistles, and how can I have the most advanced features, and how can I keep my computers secure? That's what they cared about. And they wanted to make sure that these features are available to them as quickly as possible. On the second audience, these were the business users, the enterprises. They want a stable ecosystem. They still need access to technology, but they're not moving as fast as the consumers are. They don't care about the bells and whistles. They are all about reliability, security, stability. So how do we give them a more predictable way to go move through our updates? And then there was always this specialized class, and these are a very special class. Think of these as I'm a auto manufacturing company. I've got 10 computers running Windows 95, and I never touch them because all they do is like one single action where they're going to go and screw something into a car. Most of the apps running on these machines are probably certified apps, which means if I change the configuration of that machine, the entire machine will probably need to be recertified. Right? So what they do is they deploy the OS, they deploy the app, and they just basically unplug everything and not update anything, and they just leave it alone. Right? So there's a need for those. So if you look at how our servicing branches are structured, they're laid directly on top of these audiences. Current branch is targeted at our consumer devices. Current branch for business is targeted at our business users. And long-term servicing branch is actually targeted at our specialized systems. So that's how we came up with this whole Windows as a Service model. What does this mean really when it comes to tactical motion? There are two different types of updates in Windows as a Service. Okay. One of them is quality updates. Think of this as your Patch Tuesday updates. Every month, Patch Tuesday comes around, and you're going to get an update. And these are primarily going to be security updates primarily, some bug fixes, but absolutely no features. You're never going to see a new feature land on Patch Tuesday. Okay. We want to make sure that these are the absolute minimum stuff that we can deploy and make sure that your machines are secure. Okay. The other change that we made with quality updates, all the updates are now cumulative in nature. What that does is if an enterprise ends up skipping an update, the next update that comes along will just make them whole again. Okay. The reason we went down this path is because we started seeing a lot of fragmentation on, oh, I've got these 10 KBs, but this machine only has 9, and I don't know how to rationalize it. The app works over here, but it doesn't work over there. So we've gotten feedback from partners like you, as well as our enterprise customers, saying, hey, how can we simplify this? Let's make sure that the baseline is always the same. Okay. So cumulative updates helps us get there. The second type of update is the feature update, and these are roughly twice a year. This is where we bring in new features, and we basically put out new functionality. They're still very reliable, but we still give you the rollback functionality. You deploy something, you don't like it, or customer users don't like it, they have the ability to roll back within 30 days. And then you also have the ability to go pre-flight them with insider builds. So how should I look at Windows as a Service when it comes from a timeline perspective? If you look across how much time I have to go or stay on a build, it roughly is around 22 to 24 months. And I get this question from enterprise customers a lot. Oh, you guys are going to ship something for 6 months. Does that mean I got to go refresh my environment every 6 months? The answer is no. We're not putting that. We understand that upgrades are a tax. We don't want to make it worse by trying to make you go upgrade every 6 months. The way it works is, when we are in development, we make sure that insider builds are available for you. And when we are in development for about 6 months, you get about 5 or 6 insider builds. That's your opportunity as a developer to go in and try these builds. As an enterprise customers, we encourage you, but they're probably not going to go adopt insider builds. They're going to wait for a stable build. But insider builds are absolutely available to you to go play around with while we are in development. The blue diamond you see is the point at which we declare a current branch. And this is the time when we are going to go release it and then drive adoption with our consumer ecosystem. This is when we scale up from 5 million users to hundreds of millions of users. And this is where the enterprises start adopting the build. This is where the enterprises will start piloting the CB build. and so that they can go do their due diligence with their app compat testing, making sure their apps continue to work, and then in readiness for current branch for business to be declared. About roughly 4 months after the CB is declared, we actually will declare current branch for business. Current branch for business is nothing but CB plus any security fixes or quality updates that we've done so far. Okay. So current branch for business will have no new features on top of the current branch that we declared 4 months ago. Okay. It's super important for us to maintain the stability of the build so that enterprises who are testing that build are basically deploying that same build across a large number of machines. So they'll deploy it across their enterprise, and they have the option to go defer a release if they need to, and potentially stay on that build for about a year, and we give them a 60-day grace period as well at the end of it. So from a developer perspective, this is the timeline that you want to be aware of. Where are my inflection points? You know, when are my enterprise customers ready to go adopt my app? Okay. And then we basically are repeating the whole process with the next build and the next build and the next build. Okay. So let's talk about what are some compat considerations as a developer. The first thing is, how many of you are aware of a compatibility cookbook that we published from Microsoft? Anybody use the compatibility cookbook? The compat cookbook, actually, we document any known breaking issues in the current build that we've released. It's a resource that developers as well as enterprises use to go understand what are the breaking changes in that build of the OS. So I highly encourage you to go get the compatibility cookbook. The link is at the bottom, and the deck is shared with you. Or you can go and just look for Windows 10 compatibility cookbook, search for it, and that'll be the first hit that'll come up. It also has guidance around should you test your apps. What are some of the best practices to keep in mind while you develop these apps? So a compatibility cookbook is a pretty good resource for you to have. How can we maintain a compatible ecosystem? Like, how can we work together? I think what I talk about here is not only what not to do, but a couple of best practices. The biggest issue that we see which causes compatibility issues is actually taking a dependency on the OS version. Okay. If your app takes a dependency on the OS version, the next time we come back and rev the OS, your app is going to break. So make sure that you do not take a hard dependency on the OS version. Most of the time, developers take a dependency on the OS version because they are actually trying to go look for a certain feature. Right? We have other methods to go do that. Do an API set query to see if the API exists. Right? Do not take a dependency on the OS. Right? So don't take a dependency on the OS. The best thing to do is go look for the API set that you're looking for to detect the feature that you want. The second most biggest issue that we see for compat is people using undocumented APIs. When you use an undocumented API, we provide no guarantee that we're going to not go and change or mess something up. Right? There are a lot of forums out there that talk about how you can do specialized stuff using APIs that Microsoft has not documented. Stay clear of them if you can. If you need specialized help because you're not able to do something with public APIs, reach out to us. We'll try to understand what your scenario is and try to help you out. But if you take a dependency on an undocumented API, we could end up changing the API, which will end up breaking your app. So that will definitely cause a compat issue for you. And then lastly, keep UWP and Centennial in the back of your mind. Right? This is the direction we're going to go to. Go try the desktop app converter kit. See if it'll help you convert your app into an Apex package that you can upload into the store. The other part is about insiders. Right? The insider population is about 5 million users today. You can become an insider. What does that get you? It gets you early access to builds. As a developer, you want to be able to understand what is it that we're changing inside the OS. Plus, you also want to understand what are the new features that we're introducing into the OS, okay? So that your apps can take advantage of those new features, and you can keep on enriching your app functionality as well. So become part of the community. There's a lot of focus groups. There's a lot of discussion among the insider community. There's a lot of events we put together for insiders. It's a great community to be a part of. I'll come to the point about how do you showcase your solutions. We talked about Ready for Windows. Ready for Windows is a new program that we pulled together during the Windows 10 timeframe. The target is on IT pros, so we can enable them to go discover the apps that are supported, as well as apps that are being used across the Windows 10 ecosystem. You can go declare support for your app on Ready for Windows, and I'll go show a demo quick on Ready for Windows, but primarily it lets you reach out to the audience that you want. It's ready for windows.com. It basically redirects you to the dev center. So look at the text box. We're structured just like the search providers. You can go in and look for any solution out there. So here's what we expect IT pros to do. They go in and say, oh, I actually am looking for whether Panda antivirus works. They can go in and look and see all the versions that are out there. They'll also see that Panda is actually supported on Windows 10. And if you click on the Learn More link, it actually redirects you to Panda's website where they talk more about what version of Panda is actually supported on Windows 10. This is exactly what we are expecting developers to do. This is your way of getting the word out about your app and how it's supported on Windows 10. The other thing that we do on Ready for Windows is if you have not declared support yet, then we're going to go use telemetry information to go inform our customers about how this app is doing. So in this example, I've got the TeamViewer app. They have not declared support yet on Windows 10. But we have several versions of of TeamViewer that are out there running in the Windows 10 machines. You see a few statuses out there. Adopted means TeamViewer is running on at least 10,000 commercial machines, and it seems to be doing fine, and there are no crashes or hangs. Highly adopted means it's running on at least 100,000 commercial machines, and the app is doing fine. The reason we put this information together is to be able to give IT pros the confidence that they can move forward with their Windows 10 deployment if they have TeamViewer deployed in their environment. So this is another opportunity for you to get insights into your apps and whether there's telemetry information associated with them and whether IT pros will benefit from this information. So let's go back to the deck. Make sure to go declare support. We require you to log in with an MSA and actually provide us information about your app, your company, and then there's a simple legal agreement and you can go declare support. The logo program is a little bit more structured. The requirement here is that once you declare support on Windows 10, you're primarily declaring support for all builds of Windows 10 until the app is supported by you. The reason this is a higher bar is because we want to make sure that once you declare support on Windows 10, your app continues to work regardless of how many builds Microsoft releases. And that's the behavior that we're trying to get to. So think of this as declaring, we call it evergreen support. you're declaring support on Windows 10, and your app is going to stay supported on Windows 10 unless you discover any issue. And what that'll do is that'll give the IT pros a lot more confidence about how to move their ecosystem to Windows 10. There is specific terminology associated with declaring support for Windows 10 and Windows as a service. If you use that terminology and declare support, you're entitled to get a WAS logo and the Windows 10 logo. Okay? And there is a legal agreement associated with the logo program as well. But basically, if your app is pretty safe and you're not doing crazy stuff, you can go in and do the WAS declaration of support, get the logo. It helps you market your app better by saying you're Windows 10 compatible. Lastly, I talked about the desktop bridge. There's a desktop app converter. You could go put your app through it, and if your app does not have any kinds of kernel dependency or does not access network shares or stuff, it's a pretty standalone app, it'll go through pretty smoothly. Okay? What that does is basically just change the package type. It'll create an Apex package that you can store into you can upload into the store, and then from that point, it becomes really easy for you to update your customer base. Over time, you can then consider really switching out the APIs to adopt the UWP APIs and slowly converting it into a complete UWP app. So call to action. Okay. The first thing is decouple your app support from Windows builds. I think in the past, we've seen behavior where Windows releases a build, and then app developers come in and release a new version of the app. We want to move away from that model. You should go release your app whenever you think you are ready to go add new functionality to your app, and not necessarily because Windows released a new build of the OS. Okay? So decouple your app support from specific Windows builds. Okay? Define an app life cycle. You want to be able to go in and say, hey, my app, this version of this app is actually supported for 2 years or 3 years. And within that time frame, it doesn't matter how many builds of OS come out, my app will stay supported and I will provide support for my apps. Follow the compatibility best practices. I think the two biggest gotchas are OS version, undocumented APIs. If you're a driver developer, there's more best practices in the compatibility cookbook. Leverage Windows Insider builds. These are a nice opportunity for you to get early builds, test your apps early, and then get insights into whether your app continues to work. Do targeted testing. I think this comes up because everybody's worried about, I used to go test my app for a long time, for 3 months, 4 months before declaring support. How can I now go manage this in the more shortened time frame? What we recommend is if you're already testing on insider builds, if you're tuning into the information we're putting in the compatibility cookbook, your test cycle does not need to necessarily be really long every time we put out a build of the OS. Especially as we move on and mature in the Windows as a service life cycle, once you declare support, the only reason you're going to withdraw support is when your app breaks. But hopefully, we're keeping the ecosystem pretty stable and compatible, and your apps are also compatible, which means over time, you can reduce your testing as you go on. And then declare evergreen support, get the logo. This will give you a lot of reach with our enterprise customers and get into the logo program. And that's pretty much it. Here's a few resources. You can go look up a Windows Insider program. I already talked about the Compat Cookbook. You can go download the app certification kit. Primarily, this is a store app focused stuff, but it'll still help you weed out any kind of memory exceptions or low level issues with your app. And then lastly, we have a white paper on how to develop UWP apps if that's something that you're thinking about as well. Thank you very much. Please fill out your evaluation forms, and if you have any questions, come talk to me or I can take Q&A right now. Thank you.